Well, it's good to see you again. How are you doing? I hope all is well. For all of our viewers out there, little children, I found a book, and I just found it today, and it is an incredible book. Christopher Benson, who was born in 1789, published this book in, well, at a very young age. In 1819, he published it at about the age of 30 years old. It's called The Chronology of Our Savior's Life. And he gets into the actual dates, and he's got the best information I have ever seen. Even though I disagree with his methodology, perhaps you could say, or his reliance on his own judgment, a little bit. I disagree. I mean, just very small disagreements that I have with his approach. But he has so many references, so many different counselors, that it's astonishing that he has certainly come very close to the truth in my rather, what's the word, uninformed opinion, you could say, based on the fact that I haven't read all the sources that he has. He has compiled all these sources. It's incredible. And the book is 343 pages long. It's available on archive.org. You can borrow it from the library there. I was able to borrow it for 14 days using my Google account. There are other ways to borrow it. And it's free to borrow. It's astonishing. I'm already reading page 222. I've read through very briefly just to find out at the end of each chapter what he concluded. But I read some of the chapters at the beginning, for example, to do with the death of Herod, King Herod the First, who is known to have conquered Jerusalem in 37 BCE, before our common era. We can't really say 36 because it doesn't work. For all the beautiful congruences that 37 gives us, still there are people who are going to say 36 instead of 37. It's still only a 1 year discrepancy, but it's not going to help the cause to lower that date. It makes it worse, actually. But it's so complicated trying to get a chronology for a time that's that old, back at the time of the birth of Jesus in 6 BCE, where we place it in the genealogy very late in 6 BCE, December 25th, whereas Mr. Benson places it early in the year 5 BCE, the birth of Jesus, our Lord. But because it's such a very close association in time between the dates he gives and the dates that we give, there can be no doubt about the accuracy in the most general sense of his work. It's confirming what we did, together with the work of Mr. Ramsey and others, about the time. But yesterday I forgot something I need to tell you also. Another thing I discovered yesterday is equally as significant, but this man agrees with it. And that is that the census of Quirinius in the year 6 of the Common Era, which is agreed upon by everybody, that is merely the conclusion of the registration that was done prior to that registration in the year, as we've already established, very close to the year, but we believe it actually is the year exactly of BCE 6, 6 years before the Common Era. 11 years it took to complete the first census after the registering of the individuals, and they had to travel to their each had to travel to the the city of their ancestors, in that is of the Jews. They had to travel each one to the city of their ancestors to be registered, and that was mentioned in the book of Luke chapter 2. So this is, I mean, this is incredible. But this other website, I've gotten a document from it called, well, the website I think is called The Spirited Nature, but the article itself is called Solving the Census of Quirinius, from a website, The Spirited Nature, and you can look that up and find it for yourself too. And that has amazing comments at the end of that article from many people questioning, very good questions, very open and honest, sincere questions, which are all of which are answered by the writer of this article himself, this man whose name is Caleb Jones, the man who wrote this article. I just remember his name. I don't have recollection like that normally, but my health is getting a little better still, I'm sure of it. But I think that the tooth and very likely the crown is what we're, I mean, that's the hypothesis, that the crown is what's doing all of the issue, the problem, causing all the issue, because, anyway, we're going to talk about that later. But there was no problem before the crown was put on. So the only logical hypothesis is that the crown caused and is causing all of the distress. So the first thing to do, logically, is to take the crown off and see whether that solves it. That's a logical thing to do first. And then, you know, whatever else happens, at least we've ruled that out, and that's what needs to be done. I'm thoroughly convinced of that. Anyway, this is the date is September 3rd, 2023. Fascinating. There are certain events that occur in the year 23. I'm trying to think if that's 23 CE. In the book I've been reading by Mr. Benson, there's some year 23 that keeps coming up. And so this is the year 2023 also, which is another interesting coincidence. But it's September 3rd, 2023, and it's 2035 hours Eastern Daylight Time. Remember Acts 2035? Okay, more happiness in giving than there is in receiving. So before we go into, well, let's read our proverb first. Better is it to hear the rebuke of someone wise than to be the man hearing the song of the stupid ones, little children. Very good comparison, it would seem. In other words, it's better to be denounced by someone wise, it's better to be, you know, criticized by someone wise than to hear the song of the stupid ones. What a beautiful sentiment, if you can possibly agree with that. I certainly believe it. Okay, let's come to our article for today, the Born and Raised article. And we're going to talk about these censuses, or I don't think we call them censi normally, but they could be called that. But this, so the article is actually talking about the same exact thing as what the book and the other article I was reading were talking about, which is the birth of Christ and the time of his ministry. The baptismal year of which is also agreed upon in the book by Mr. Benson, which is written in 1819 of our common era. It's just remarkable. He addresses all of the difficulties also in all of these dates, all the contradictions that occur in the dates, such as, for example, the 15th year of Tiberius, which he very thoroughly proves are reckoned from the point where Tiberius in Germany, while he's still fighting in Germany, becomes equal in power to his father. And therefore that is the beginning point. That is the time where his year one, according to Luke, begins. And that's according to Mr. Benson. It's according, we didn't even have that in the genealogy yet. So we can add that to, potentially, to the genealogy. But born, in the Born and Raised article, chapter 6, paragraph 4, the cycle years in Egypt, which may differ from Syria, although they don't differ much, to be honest. It's just that there aren't as many censuses or registrations in Syria as there are in Egypt, or the but isn't that fascinating? We have year 6 CE now as the conclusion of the registration, which began in 6 BCE, 11 years later. So it took the Romans 11 years to organize, together with King Herod of Jerusalem and all of the Jews in Judea. It took them 11 years to organize the very first census, which Luke calls the first census. And so this resolves all the issues to do with 6 CE, which many people have claimed proves that Luke is wrong and he makes a mistake in his gospel, because he refers to, but he doesn't, because in the book of Acts, Luke refers to that very same census that occurred in 6 CE. Also, he refers to it in his book of Acts. So we know there's no contradictions in Luke. This is incredible. I'm just blazing with enthusiasm. But the cycle years in Egypt, which may differ from Syria, okay? For all we know, they could be way different, but they're not. But they may differ. They're given by Mr. Ramsey as in BCE 23, BCE 9, which we believe is the same as in Syria, 6 CE, which is the famous one that Luke writes about in the book of Acts, and also which is part of the registration that occurred in BCE 6. Then we have the year CE 20, 34 CE, 48 CE, 62, 76, 90, 104, 118, 132, 146, 160, etc., all the way up to 328 CE. So these cycle years begin in the reign of Augustus, who reigned from BCE 27 to 14 CE. In the case of Syria, the enrollments begin later than BCE 23, as I just mentioned, and as Clement suggests. And Mr. Ramsey notes that the fragments of Egyptian census papers discovered had, at the time of his book, not been dated before 20 CE, the Egyptian census papers. But to the extent that Clement indicates or represents the opinion prevalent in Egypt at about the end of the 2nd century, Caesar Augustus was the one who began it. Clement lived less than 2.5 centuries, let's say, not prior to, but subsequent to these events. The earliest example of a census, that is any census, right? Not just the ones in Egypt, but it's the one in Egypt that survived during the reign of Tiberius Caesar, 20 CE, of the extant fragments as cited above. That was the one we cited, which was the earliest known Egyptian census. Although there is a coincidence of the projected beginning of the census cycle in BCE 23. That's the 23 coincidence, yeah. The census cycle begins in 23, and we're in the year 2023. It's fascinating, too. Also, with the first year of Augustus' official imperial title, which began June 27th, BCE 23, showing that the enrollment cycle was not initiated in Egypt. Wouldn't it have been nice to live back in those days? They wouldn't have to remember 4 digits for the date. It's just 23. That's the year. Showing that the enrollment cycle was not initiated in Egypt. The fact that Augustus began to rule in 23, which is the same year as the beginning of the census cycle. It's amazing. So they take the census, and then some years later, they collect the money. Which was what happened when Quirinius. And in the article, which I mentioned, by Caleb Jones on on his website, whatever it was, the Spirited something, which you can find from the earlier part of the video. In his article, he mentions this important idea that that there was a delay, of course, in the collection of the money. Okay, but let's finish this paragraph first. Thus, the 14-year cycle, commencing 7 years after that date of 30. Okay, this is more true, it says, since Augustus rules Egypt, since August 29th, BCE 30. So the 14-year cycle commencing 7 years after that date is evidently not merely Egyptian in origin, but logically occurs throughout the empire. So, see, Augustus ruled Egypt, actually, before he became the emperor of the Roman Empire. Roman Empire. He ruled Egypt 7 years before he became Roman emperor. And he was the first one to be called that officially also. I mean, he's a very important... something else from the Spirited... The Spirited Nature, that website. I'm going to open that document. I'm going to show it to you. What happened there? Come on. It's not right. Here it is. Okay. Got it. I'm going to have to bring it over. Right. So, I mean, Mr. Ramsey's the one who argues that this proves that this 14-year cycle was logically occurring throughout the whole of the Roman Empire, not just, or as Luke said, the entire inhabited earth. If we recall what Luke said. This is the article, these are the comments, of course, from the article called Solving the Census of Quirinius by Caleb Jones, which is a wonderful article. Let's bring this up. So here we go. In ancient Greek, there was an ablative. That's what he says. There's an ablative form in ancient Greek, an ablative form that was abandoned at the time when the Koine Common Greek of the common language of the days of Jesus, and before that, somewhat before that, the Koine Greek, it was called, it was the common language of the people. Before or during this time, actually, the ablative form of the verb, or was it the verb? Let me think. No, it's not the form of the verb. It's a form of, like, the genitive, for example, which is the possessive. My house, that's genitive. My is the genitive preposition. But, you know, or his, or Caesar's, with an apostrophe S, that's genitive. But there's an ablative form, and there's also the dative form, right, the accusative form. But the ablative form was another form of use of prepositions in Greek, in the ancient Greek, before the Koine did away with it. And if Luke is using the ablative, then he's not, which is very possible, and looks like that's equally the way that it could be translated instead of the way that it is. It doesn't say that Quirinius was the governor. It says he was governing Syria. And it also, or there are different translations of it in the ablative, that he was governing out of Syria. That is another way it can be rendered. We can't talk about all that today. It's just too much, but it's phenomenal. I'm really excited about it. Okay, that's done for that. We're going to look at our reading in Deuteronomy now. Deuteronomy 25. We're still on schedule time-wise, I think. Oh my goodness. That is some just beautiful well water. It's just beautiful. It's not salt. I'm not salting it anymore because I'm trying to detoxify. So I'm not going to salt it. It wouldn't be good. It's really good the way it is. And that's it. We're going to read our God, Jehovah willing, little children, we're going to read Deuteronomy 25. Moses, again, still speaking to the Israelites on the plains, which are on the east side of the Jordan River opposite Jericho. In case a dispute arises between men and they have presented themselves for the judgment, you must also judge them, meaning the judges must judge them, and pronounce the righteous one righteous and pronounce the wicked one wicked. And it must occur that if the wicked one deserves to be beaten, the judge must also have him laid prostrate and given strokes before him by number to correspond with his wicked deed. With 40 strokes he may beat him. He should add none, for fear he should continue to beat him with many strokes in addition to these. It could get out of control. And your brother is actually disgraced in your eyes. By that, I'm thinking he possibly too many strokes and a person might give way to weeping or something. In verse 4, you must not muzzle a bull while it is thrashing. Verse 5, in case brothers dwell together and one of them has died without his having a son, the wife of the dead one should not become a strange man's outside. Her brother-in-law should go to her, and he must take her as his wife and perform brother-in-law marriage with her. And it must occur that the firstborn whom she will bear should succeed to the name of his dead brother, that his name may not be wiped out of Israel. Now, if the man finds no delight in taking his brother's widow, his brother's widow must then go up to the gate of the older man and say, up to the gate to the older man. The widow must go and say, quote, my husband's brother has refused to preserve his brother's name in Israel. He has not consented to perform brother-in-law marriage with me, end quote. And the older men in his city, of his city, same thing, right, must call him and speak to him. And he must stand and say, quote, I have found no delight in taking her, end quote. At that, his brother's widow must approach him before the eyes of the older men and draw his sandal off his foot and spit in his face and answer and say, quote, that is the way it should be done to the man who will not build up his brother's household, end quote. And his name must be called in Israel, quote, the house of the one who had his sandal drawn off, end quote. We got bright enough video here? Is it too dim? Let's make it brighter. Make it brighter. It's not getting any brighter, is it? Oh, that's too bright now. It's not even controllable from... That seems... There we go. Seems a little better. Verse 11. In case men, Moses continues, struggle together with one another, and the wife of the one has come near to deliver her husband out of the hand of the one striking him, and she has thrust out her hand and grabbed hold of him by his privates, you must then amputate her hand. Your eye must feel no sorrow. Sounds like a fairly strict law. Verse 13, you must not come to have in your bag two sorts of weights, a great one and a small one. You must not come to have in your house two sorts of ephahs, a great one and a small one. A weight, accurate and just, you should continue to have. An ephah, accurate and just, you should continue to have, in order that your days may become long on the soil that Jehovah your God is giving you. For everyone doing these things, every doer of injustice, is something detestable to Jehovah your God. Verse 17, there should be a remembering of what Amalek did to you in the way when you were coming out of Egypt, how he met you in the way and proceeded to strike in the rear of you, all those straggling after you, while you were exhausted and weary, and he did not fear God. And it must occur that when Jehovah your God has given you rest from all your enemies round about in the land that Jehovah your God is giving you as an inheritance to take possession of it, you should wipe out the mention of Amalek from under the heavens. You must not forget. That's the end of Deuteronomy 25. So the idea of the large and small ephah. A man might have two sized baskets with which he distributes or sells his produce, and to some people he might say, I'll just use the smaller basket and I'll sell them for the same price, a smaller amount of the same product that I sell to others for using the larger basket for that price. So this is a concept of my ice melting, actually. This is a concept of why two sorts of weights, a big one and a small one, if you were weighing produce instead of measuring it, or two sorts of ephahs. This is the idea of how that is carried out, or how injustice is done in measuring. It's a case of injustice, and Jehovah detests that kind of thing. There's two sorts of ways of measuring instead of one way for everybody, which is the right way, is to measure with one measure for everybody. So Revelation 10, once again the Apostle John giving us his vision in heaven that's delivered to him from the Lamb of God, Jesus Christ in heaven, telling John or revealing these things after he told John a number of things at the beginning of this book of Revelation. Revelation 10, little ones. John says, and I saw another strong angel descending from heaven, arrayed with a cloud, and a rainbow was upon his head, and his face was as the sun, and his feet were as fiery pillars, and he had in his hand a little scroll opened, and he set his right foot upon the sea, but his left one upon the earth. And he cried out with a loud voice, just as when a lion roars. And when he cried out, the seven thunders uttered their own voices. Now when the seven thunders spoke, I was at the point of writing, but I heard a voice out of heaven say, quote, seal up the things the seven thunders spoke, and do not write them down, end quote. And the angel that I saw standing on the sea and on the earth raised his right hand to heaven, and by the one who lives forever and ever, who created the heaven and the things in it, and the earth and the things in it, and the sea and the things in it, he swore, there will be no delay any longer. But in the days of the sounding of the seventh angel, when he is about to blow his trumpet, the sacred secret of God, according to the good news which he declared to his own slaves the prophets, is indeed brought to a finish. And the voice that I heard out of heaven is speaking again with me and saying, go, take the open scroll that is in the hand of the angel who is standing on the sea and on the earth. And I went away to the angel and told him to give me the little scroll. And he said to me, take it and eat it up, and it will make your belly bitter, but in your mouth it will be sweet as honey. And I took the little scroll out of the hand of the angel and ate it up, and in my mouth it was sweet as honey. But when I had eaten it up, my belly was made bitter. And they said to me, you must prophesy again with regard to peoples and nations and tongues and many kings. End quote. That's the end of Revelation chapter 10. Little ones, it's wonderful that we've concluded our study with 4 minutes remaining in our video, at the most. But actually less than 4 minutes now. So, isn't this discovery incredible? I can't remember all the things. There's so many things I've been discovering. But that's the way, when I was writing these articles, that was the rapidity with which I was discovering things. Exactly as I did yesterday. I discovered that article. Today it was. I discovered the book by Christopher Benson. So remarkably fantastic, just incredible. Christopher Benson, who died in 1858, born in 1789, apparently about 30 years old, very closely at the time he wrote this book. That's very young for a man to write a book like that, is it not? It seems to me it is. I mean, I essentially discovered the chronology that we call the genealogy when I was about 53 years old, which is 13 years ago, which would put us back around 2010, but that was after some of my discoveries. They began in about 2007, I suppose. So that's more like still only 16 years ago. So yeah, I mean, that was about age 50 for me. But this man wrote this incredible book. I haven't even begun to get into it. It's going to be maybe even better, but you never know. It could be worse than I think right now, but it could be better. It's just so good. I just didn't have time to read it all. You know, I just discovered it. That's how I just did just a few hours ago, if that. I mean, and then this article by Caleb Jones is so amazing, talking about the ablative tense. It's not a tense, sorry. The ablative case. It's called the dative case, the genitive case, the accusative case, and the ablative case, which was abandoned, abolished, or it fell out of use during the time of the common Greek in the first century, which was called the Koine Greek. But this ablative gives us the example that it could mean, let's check it out, out of. Let's search out of. You can download this article, save it as a PDF file on your own hard drive, and then you can search it and read it. You don't require the internet for that. Out of Syria. I'm not going to find it. I just have to look for ablative. There it is. So they started to say things like, he was the governor instead of he governed out of Syria. They said he was the governor of Syria. And just for, now every translation of the Bible says that in exactly those ways. They all say that. Okay? So if we look at, we should look at it right now. We have 1 minute. We have 5 seconds. Luke chapter 2, it says, Quirinius was governor of Syria, but it's not necessarily to be translated that way. He governed out of Syria. It's equally valid. So he could have been fighting the Hamanidenses, governing out of Syria at the time of the governor Varus of the presiding governor who lived in Syria, Varus. Okay, so we have, it is September 3rd, 2023, once again. It's 2101 hours Eastern Daylight Time. We're out of time for our video. I love you. I love you. And all of you, I want you to know that I love you. And this is Ward Green. And on my behalf, this is Crow, my beloved watch. And Cassie, my Casio watch, also a very accurate watch, saying bye for now.